provide civil rights for the poor for 2 hours on your radio dial, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Call-in number is 427-3772, and we will invite you into the show with a little Daryl Chaney and some music from about 5 years ago, but it's still rolling. That was Daryl Chaney.
Chaney.
Thank you. Sorry. Don't be sorry. That's right. Correcting me, as usual, with a sharp lash to the right ear, is Phil Free, local musician and rabble-rouser, IWW transient and man about the mall. I believe that was from I Had to Be Born in This Century by Daryl Chaney. Chaney. And the... I'll never learn... Chaney. I got to work on that. Good album. And the song was, I think it's Sinky One. In any case, we'll have more from Daryl Chaney later in the hour. Right now, we have a special guest, a man who has his own show on Monday nights from 7 to 9. 7:30. Thank you. 7:30. And is very being very discreet in his manner of correcting me. Usually I get abused roundly for my errors, but Phil is going easy on me this morning. 7:30, Phil has a great show. He frequently breaks stories that I think are of interest to folks who listen to this show, so you might want to tune into his show 7:30 to 9 or 9:30, is it?
Yes, 9.
And Phil himself has been not just a commentator on events, but he's also been a participant. He's a musician with does your band have a name?
Well, of course they have a name.
Are we thinking it's not the... Is it Just Kidding still, or has it changed its name? For some reason, I was thinking...
You have to bring my mic up for me to answer that question.
I don't want
to
bring your mic. Okay, I'll bring up your mic. Go ahead.
The band is called Just Kidding.
He's just...
Actually, Jess, without a T.
Just Kidding. You have any new songs out? I noticed you said you were by the TV station this morning checking out your album.
Hey, no, we plug it. We plug it when the cameras are on, out in front of the public access cable station. They film passers-by on the sidewalk, so we go up and we stick our tapes up against the window. Me and Bob the other day, we plugged ourselves before we went to the mall. We tell people to come down. So, you know, if you watch public access cable, you never know who's going to stagger by that window.
Indeed.
So I was staggered by this morning, but fortunately I could not use the commercial airspace. They were showing some stupid show.
As they often do, actually, we've discussed controversy at community television in the past, particularly around the Charlie Reid show, which has recently been losing hosts right and left, right wing and left wing, both. Interesting. And there's a new show coming on the air called The Living Room. Frankly, I don't...
Guess I'm going to be on that.
Uh-oh. Film in The Living Room? That sounds like a contradiction in terms.
I know. It's the first time I've been in a living room in a while.
Well, you've been on the mall a lot, more than in the living room. At least that's what...
That's my living room, yes.
The mall is your living room. In fact, that it's been criticized, the mall, recently, as being the living room of the grungy, the grimy, the greasy, and the gritty. And our merchants, of course, are feeling, some of them, as evidenced by the Downtown Commission that I guess I referred to in my last show. Downtown Commission is a group that meets once a month. Essentially, it seems like a non-controversial group, but out of this group has come such num-nums as the downtown ordinances in 1994, making it illegal to sit down or to spare change on the mall. The spare change machine proposal at Cathcart and Pacific, which was, of course, deep-sixed by Mayor Rotkin, since putting in a spare changer at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific would mean invoking the 50 feet from a spare change sit-down, go-to-jail law, which he also supported and still supports, I'm presuming.
Yeah, I don't think that one's gone away either. I'm sure that's on the back burner.
Well, it's interesting. There were several proposals that came up. I'm going to reiterate them for those of you who weren't in on Friday, didn't hear my show, and also for those who heard it but weren't able to talk about it. You can, of course, call in and discuss anything that we are talking about, and even stuff we're not talking about, at 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Downtown Commission had at least two proposals before it I thought were of interest. One was a proposal to put in more spare change or change-making machines, one near the Del Mar Theater, about half a block down, actually, at the intersection of, I guess, is it? It's not Church, it's... Soquel, what becomes Soquel and Pacific. It's not called Soquel on our side of the river, but it's that intersection. And then another change maker on Maple Street. And, of course, I'm all for having, you know, machines with, spitting out dimes and quarters, particularly since they've raised the parking rates and are about to start metering the garages so that you won't be able to park without paying downtown.
But we have Mr. Twister.
And we do have...
Are we okay?
Mr. Twister will save us.
Feed by meter.
Feed my meter, baby.
So, we do, but unfortunately, these new spare change machines mean new illegal areas for sitting. And even more directly, I mean, they can say, well, yeah, that's not really our department. We put in the change-making machines, and, if people get arrested for sitting, that's just how it goes. It's mainly a public service for people who have to park. That argument, I suppose, can be argued. But the second aspect of what the Downtown Commission did on Thursday that interested me was they passed an approval of fencing off completely the Ford parking lot so that you cannot drive in or out, you cannot walk in or out. It becomes a forbidden zone. And they also will extend that fence halfway onto the sidewalk so that half the sidewalk where people are sitting at Cathcart and Pacific will become private fenced area. That is
the legend.
Now, the debate around this was horrendous. I was the only one who spoke against it. Actually, the chairperson kind of referred to my concerns with the only sympathy in the group. The others, who were John Lesher of Artisans, Frank Keller of Game-A-Lot, a number of other merchants, were just adamant that this had to be done to improve the business downtown. and get rid of the people who were plaguing the city with their tie-dyed clothes and their long and grubby hairdos. You know?
It must be stopped. This madness must be stopped.
Well, I think the madness of repressing the community and trying to homogenize it into a Carmel North has to be stopped. And I suggest people who want to oppose the Downtown Commission's proposal, which I think will go to the City Council, though who knows, it may even take a back road and be averted. I'm not sure if it's going to go to City Council, should give a call to their council person, anybody they want on the council, actually, all the way from Mayor Mike Robocop Rotkin to Celia Saylittle Scott, who actually she's talking more these days. I have to commend her for at least trying to talk at the last council meeting against the complete... she didn't really speak against Citizens Committee for the Homeless's money seizure, but she spoke in favor of money for SOS, Save Our Shelter, which is the homeless campground, which was roundly defeated by Mayor Mike Rotkin and sellout Scott Kennedy, or shall we call him Cave-In Scott Kennedy? No, let's call him Squawk Box Scott Kennedy. In any case, we have a number of names, which I suppose... some people will consider this is the reason the City Council has voted the way it has is because I've been calling them naughty names. No, I think the reason I've been calling them naughty names is because they've been voting the way they have. anyway.
I would like to interject something
sure,
on the Capcart and Pacific Street people situation.
Yes.
I'd like to address the downtown business owners, if any of them were listening, which they probably aren't, but maybe somebody can tell them what I said. Did it ever occur to you people that, for one, perhaps your businesses suck and they don't have anything that the people need? For two, did it ever occur to you that people don't have much money? Maybe that's why the businesses are failing, because people have less and less money. All people, except for very rich people, have less and less money all the time in this day and age, and that's why your businesses are failing. The guy at Woolworths came out when I was playing guitar the other day. It was Hassan, the guy that spare changes there. And I see him every morning. He's a very faithful spare changer. He doesn't bother anybody. He just sits there with his hat on the sidewalk. He doesn't talk to people, nothing. He's very nice about what he does.
And that is legal. That is completely within the law.
That is legal.
You're allowed to have a sign and a hat and sit down, provided you aren't blocking a window display or a doorway.
And a guy from Woolworths came out and told him, he said, you know, make it really difficult to keep this business in operation when you're out here taking all the money. So I looked in the guy's hat, had about $3 worth of spare change, mostly nickels and pennies. We've been out there all day. I'm sure if I'd have hung out and watched the cash register of Woolworth, I'm sure it was ka-ching-ing, ka-ching-ing, ka-ching-ing all morning. It's really a ridiculous argument these people are making, but the argument I'm hearing lately is that the poor people and the panhandlers are taking away money before people can spend it in the stores, and that is just ridiculous. People are talking about keeping a business afloat against... keeping a person afloat. A person's personal survival depends on him spare changing on the mall, and you know, people's jobs and things could be severely affected by the spare change he takes out of their pockets.
Well,
this got really ridiculous. One of the people that we get a lot of complaint about, the homeless, is businesses like the Cat and Canary. If you looked in the window of the Cat and Canary, it might occur to you that few people have the money to buy that fancy shit they have in the window, and I don't know anybody that would want to wear the crap anyways. You know, maybe if your people provided something that the people needed, your businesses might survive. And quit fucking trying to find a scapegoat to blame it on.
Yeah, I think it isn't even a choice, obviously, between the welfare of a person or the survival of a person with his hat in hand outside and the survival of Woolworths.
I don't care if Woolworths.
to me, that's a specious argument, and I think, I think that it has nothing to do with the survival of Woolworths. It has to do with, or it may make things a little more difficult for businesses downtown. I mean, I actually met a woman. I traveled down south this weekend to Monterey Bay area, and I met a woman who said that she never came back to Santa Cruz Mall because, not because she was panhandled, because some guy demanded money from her and then struck her physically when he wouldn't give her money.
Well, that's out of line.
You know, that's way out of line. I said, you know, that's bullshit. You know, you should have called the cops and you know, you should have done this, you should have done that. It's easy, for, of course, for me to Monday morning quarterback that one. But, you know, abusive episodes that are real are, you know, certainly something that not only merchants have cause to be concerned with, but everybody has cause to be concerned with. But they happen. You know, that, unfortunately, is the result of the times we are in. And we have to fight that. We have to be on the lookout for that. And I think your best allies in that situation are the people on the street, not the cops, not the merchants who are afraid to go out on the streets. I mean, there are, of course, our hero merchants like Neil Coonerty, who successfully tackled the skateboarder, I guess it was.
Oh, yes.
A year and a half ago, the criminal skateboarder.
I remember that one.
You know, but frankly, the more activity, and I think First Night showed this. More activity on the streets, the less likely the likelihood of, you know, abusive activities like that going unobserved and unchallenged. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, the skateboarder, I remember walking with that man down the levee one night about what had happened to him, and I didn't know who he was, and then he told me, and we got to talking, and he said, his bail was $25,000. This was for Neil Coonerty. He decided that he wanted to do some public arrest.
Mm-hmm.
This brother, you know, pretty strong young man, came skateboarding at probably a brisk pace. I didn't see it. There were a lot of witnesses, and
he was in the middle of it.
Well, all of a sudden, he's in a $25,000 bond. Who he has to call his grandmother to get like $3,000 just to get out of jail, and his only desire is to get out of town.
Whatever happened to that case? And by the way, we're on a line with Crossroads Chris Brazda. Hi, Chris.
Who knows? Hi.
I followed that case into the next day. I think I have a story to tell you about what happened to that skateboarder after he got out of jail. After Chris gets done, I'll tell you.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, Bobby had did a lot of literature with Bob Norse on early efforts to get thousands of flyers out, and I'm glad you did that. You know, because that's not my specialty. But I did follow up with some of my own flyers on the information.
Yeah, you have been doing a lot of research and flyering. At least you were a month or two ago on Citizens Committee for the Homeless's Community House Project, the what I call the Trailers Not Trolls Project,
right,
which recently got a permit, I understand, that the zoning permit last Thursday. Though there is 10 days to challenge that permit, and I was going to bring up that issue on the air shortly for those who want to cough up $50. I don't know.
Well, they're not going to bring the trailers in. Well, anyway, Bobby said that he was waiting for Daryl Darling in the rain Friday at 8 a.m.
Now, who is Bobby?
Bobby is the man who did a lot of the literature.
Oh, right. He's with SOS, Save Our Shelters. Yeah, I remember that.
He had volunteered to work for the project, because there is, they did give the homeless supposedly $18,000. I mean, if I did, you know, I just skimmed I didn't read carefully, but supposedly Daryl was coming up with $18,000 to give the homeless for the labor that they might do on the project.
Daryl Darling is the head of the Community House project.
He said $20,000. Was donated, not in labor, what it would cost to put the 10...
Chris, let me interrupt you and tell our listeners, I'm sorry about this, but this, who knows? If you haven't heard about it, the Community House Project is a project which will displace 200 to 300 people at the only open-air sheltered campground in Santa Cruz. Actually, it's already been closed down in violation of a contract with the campers.
Well, your estimate may be a little high, but I'd put it 150 to 175, and Dan Hopkins got all those numbers, 138 tents at one point,
right.
But I figured the winner would have beat it back, and anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I wanted to interrupt briefly to just kind of let people know that there was this community house project we're talking about, which many of us have been fighting, some of us because we think it's a complete boondoggle. That's been your perspective. Me, because I don't think it should displace the campground, and I think that that has to be the first priority, open-air shelter for people, particularly in a city where there's a sleeping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night.
Well, they're going
to
get $150,000 for mental health. So obviously it looks like a SSI house or a halfway house or drug alcohol rehab, because I say $1.3 million in the literature. That's from the $620,000 construction cost, $300,000.
You're talking about community house.
Right, $300,000 in to buy the land, to pay the Lutherans back for the land. That's $1 million, and then $300,000 their operating budget per year, you know.
So we're actually talking about this 10-trailer project, which will house 45 people, which at a cost of $200 to $600 a month per person, compared with housing, as you put it, 150, up to 250 people on the property now. Admittedly, a shitty piece of property, but nonetheless, the only legal place for people to sleep. And what we have instead is we have city council members like Scott Kennedy and even more people I trust more, like Byers and Scott, though I don't trust them that much more, talking about establishing some kind of open-air shelter campground on public property. Which isn't, it's just, in my mind, it's just not going to happen.
Scott Kennedy says money is not the problem. Somebody has to come up with a plan for it, and he's already said that it can be cited in the Pogo NIP, but he rejected the Sycamore Grove. I didn't know where this was. This is right above Saul's Tannery on Highway 9 going towards Highway 9. And I didn't know that was in the Pogo NIP Park. I thought it was adjacent to Bob's. Pine Grove, but
we don't want to get too close to Felton either. They've got a problem with it.
No, it's right on the bottom of Highway 9, right before you get into Santa Cruz, so-called Sycamore Grove, which is, I guess, in the Pogo NIP Park.
Yeah, but then we got the civilian fascists to deal with in that neck of the woods.
Kennedy rejected that. So maybe to ask him, where would he cite it? Where is a site that you would put a campground? Well,
Kennedy's response to that has been, of course, the activists have produced so much hostility and anxiety about citing things anywhere that it can't be done, and the activists are to blame for that.
He's made it harder. It's just maybe put it to him what would be an acceptable site for such a, because he said there's no problem. The money's not a problem. All you need is all you need is showers and clearly demarcated areas where fires are allowed and all this. And I guess.
Now you're talking about what he said back during the. During the duck pond meetings?
I'm saying on there was about 5 minutes there where Scott Kennedy and Mike Rockin made some very positive sounds.
At the last city council meeting?
Yeah, Friday. When was that? Tuesday.
Tuesday. Uh-huh.
And then Thursday was the planning, and Tuesday was 6-0 to give them the money to move the trailers. They needed $28,000 to move the trailers.
Right, $3,000 of which was new money, $25,000 of which had already been granted, and the rest of the money was sent to a subcommittee headed by Kennedy, to which CCH would have to apply for more money.
They're going to control the disbursement of funds depending on what their construction costs look like. Yeah, they're going to scrutinize the costs. That's excellent, really.
Well, if you have confidence that they're going to give it good scrutiny, and I don't know, do you have confidence in that respect?
Well, if you're going to be able to see the results of what's issued, what paper comes out of it. I haven't definitely seen all the paper. I've seen, I haven't seen the their grant now was submitted January 5th, and they're asking for $100,000 over 4 years.
Well, I'd like to see that if you can.
So that may be obtainable from Tim Reynolds. I haven't.
I would encourage you if you can to keep tabs on this subcommittee of City Council, what is social welfare, headed by Kennedy, who controls the disbursement of money to CCH, which is of course the property owners who are putting in this trailer project and eliminating the open air campground, because I think. I think you have a particular interest in and a particular, expertise around the issue of money coming and going. I don't always agree with your analysis, but I think that it's really important for someone to be monitoring it, and I think you're certainly in a good position to do that. Maybe you can contact City Council at 429-3550, as can anybody else, and find out when the next meeting of the Social Welfare Subcommittee is. I tried last Friday, and they had no information for me, but presumably it's got to be meeting soon, because, hey, Daryl Darling wants ducats.
Okay, I thought it was would be a committee composed of three council members.
It is.
Okay, now this is not the same as the alternate open-air shelter committee.
No, different committee.
That's going to more official than it has been. It's just been a series of four or five meetings once a month.
It's been a series of, it's been more or less that. The open-air shelter subcommittee, which Mike Rotkin denied was a subcommittee, but,
there were noises to make it into a subcommittee that it needed official support. Support from the council.
Yeah, whether it's a subcommittee or not, as you noticed and as I noticed, because we were both attending those meetings, it went nowhere and is going nowhere. And, theoretically it has somewhere to go, but it requires some real will. The last subcommittee meeting I was on, as I reported to this group, to the audience, the radio audience, the city of Scott actually began seeking some kind of exemption to the sleeping ban if there's no open-air shelter by March 15th, which is the date that the armory closes down, and 80 to 150 more people will be on the streets immediately. I happen to think this is all talk, although I'm not saying Celia's lying to us. I'm saying that she's just, you know, she's...
No. She's worked hard. I haven't seen the result of the work of the searches that, you know, Sharon Connable, Barbara River, Celia Scott, they did go out, maybe Catherine Price, they did go out and do quite a bit of work hunting
for
a site.
I
just never thought that there would be a better site, and why give it up until we get a better,
until we get a
site guaranteed. But, hey, that wasn't the way that, you know, that wasn't the sentiment out there in the field. The sentiment out there was go ahead and take the 2 weeks, and they're still at Sunset. They're now located at Sunset Beach, and they're down to like 25 or
20,
30.
19, actually. I was there last night.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I've said this before, and because I guess I diverge from Save Our Shelter on this issue, which is the group of campers. Actually, it may not be Save Our Shelter. It may be the River Street Refugees, which is a smaller group, the people that actually were deported by Mike Rotkin out to New Brighton and then are now at Sunset Beach because they have to roam from beach to beach. You know, they have their own concerns and interests, and I hope they find shelter, and I'm glad to see people support them, and you can, by the way, by calling 425-5939, Barbara River Woman, and she can get them donations.
What's your HUF number again?
And my HUF number is 423-HUF,
423-4833. As I was talking to Bobby, who was getting ready to go to Stanford to take the skirting off the trailers in preparation to move them, and they said they were going to move them not directly on the site to begin with, but close by, so...
Right. Well, my point has always been that, you know, you say that, well, the campers decided themselves they wanted to move up to New Brighton Beach. Well, that was done under extreme duress when Rotkin pulled his, you know, we'll bring out the cops. And
it was also done with the expectation that there was some money to hand around and there was work involved in doing this trailer project.
Well, they also bought off essentially 40-plus people and sent them out to another beach. And frankly, it's understandable because these people did not want to be jailed. Some of them had warrants for petty bullshit,
right,
like the sleeping ban.
Right. No, some of them had serious federal warrants. Well, you know, that they didn't want to be filmed by cameras.
And
you want to let these people out wandering around, it would be easier to, you know, if there had been in one spot from a law enforcement aspect, I always argued it was...
Yeah, but see,
the overwhelming
majority of people who used that field were not at all represented by this group. I mean, this group was, you might say, the creme de la creme and the hardline protesters and the folks who are willing to stay, and I commend them and I support them. But there are plenty of other people who desperately need a place at night, people who are passing through town and need a place at night. There is no, you know, provision for that kind of shelter in the open-air shelter and in the interface satellite shelter program. And there will be no provision and no room, and there is no room currently for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of homeless people in Santa Cruz. They have to hide out. So frankly, the fact that a small group of people made a deal doesn't mean much to me. In fact, the same group of people is being trashed now by the mayor and by the Sentinel. If you read today's Sentinel, you see a thumbs down, which talks about, which supports Rotkin's complete distortion of the issue and saying, we will not give free land away.
That
whole Marxist thing of his is a joke that I'm not laughing at anymore.
Right,
though. He's like the worst type of capitalist there is, and he gets in there under the color of socialism and Marxism and all this. Teaches a class up on college, man.
Right.
He may teach it, but he don't practice what he teaches. That's for damn sure.
Anyway, what I'm saying is that even if the River Street refugees want, and I would like to see another campground too, but you know, a lot of the River Street refugees' analysis of the whole thing, I think, is influenced by its leadership, and its leadership is run by Sherry Connable and Barbara Riverwoman. And frankly, these are people who are not interested in protest; they are interested in negotiation. And I've got no problem with negotiation if it leads somewhere. But I feel that negotiation without protest goes nowhere, and unfortunately, that's what they're about. There's no protest plan. They're just endlessly negotiating, running around to the Board of Supervisors and county, looking for, you know, pieces of property in the county. I mean,
wait. The former mayor said he would cite that money's no problem, and he would cite in the Pogo Nip a campground. I mean, I think he said that. I've got that on,
Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau promised the campers they could stay on the property. And Catherine Byers promised that there'd be money for the winter campground. I mean, there have been promises made right and left that have not been kept. I frankly have not heard myself, and although I'm glad you bring it up, and I'll be happy to see that quote. If you can get Scott Kennedy
to come
out publicly for a campground on the Pogo Nip in the next 2 months, I would, you know, I will personally buy you a steak dinner.
Yeah, they did reject the first.
Or a tofu dinner.
They did reject the Sycamore Grove site, but the park's 600 acres.
It's bullshit. I mean, frankly, that's my analysis of it. Kennedy's major comments.
Well, I don't want to disbelieve his statement. Now, actually, what he exactly said,
I
want to go back
to
the tape of the city council and listen to it, which is probably readily available, at least the audio.
Well, you're a man who's done a lot of transcribing of those tapes. Maybe what you could do is...
The problem is I'm in court trying to stay out of jail myself.
I
need legal assistance, and
I've
got two court cases coming, one in...
Maybe I will do that at some point, although, frankly, I'm exhausted with this entire citizen's committee brouhaha and this.
If somebody could give me a hand, I'd show them what paper I have on the
why don't you leave your phone number, and if anybody wants to help you, Chris, to kind of unravel what Scott Kennedy's latest position
leave a number in my room. I might not hear it ring all the time, or
right.
I might be busy. 469-9527 and
469-9527, folks, for anybody. 469-9527. You want to help Crossroads Chris here check over the tapes and transcribe them so we can actually find out and possibly even talk to Scott Kennedy directly. You can always call Scott Kennedy at 429-3550. Anybody who's listening to the show wants to know what Scott Kennedy's position is, call 429-3550 and ask him whether he does in fact favor a campground and whether he feels that he is willing to commit himself to there being a campground in the next 2 months by March 15th, by the time the open-air shelter opens up. And if he's willing to do that, I will personally sit down downtown and...
I think it's already in the tape last Tuesday City Council meeting and or in the newspaper.
Well, good. Let's find out about that. But frankly, as far as I'm concerned...
Okay, one other thing.
I started
meeting Bobby yesterday, and a friend of his, a musician, said things are getting a little mean up at the Armory, and that he's checking things in, and he's not getting things checked back out again, and people are stealing...
Sort of like Roach Motel. They
sleeps.
Check in, but they don't check out.
A guitar was stolen up there. The thieving is kind of getting a little out of control. And just now lately, and the staff is not doing enough about it. So, you know, maybe that's a little internal,
well, of course
little
they're
internal
not,
problem.
Of course they're not doing anything about it.
I,
this is the way our societies run. They keep us with nothing until we feed off of ourselves. The Armory is no different than anything else. It's the same people running it. This is, it's an old pattern that we really need to recognize here. They're not going to help us. We need to help us.
Well, Chris, let me ask you again to give out your number for people who want to help you with the Scott Kennedy quest, so to speak.
Okay, I wish somebody, I'll test this number. I haven't tested it yet. 469-9527.
469-9527. And is there anything you want to add before I... move on and give someone else a chance on the open line.
Oh, give somebody else a chance.
All right, well, thanks, Chris.
Okay.
And call again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that's Crossroads Chris Brazda, a longtime homeless activist, sometime controversial figure within the homeless community, who is again seeking some assistance and apparently got his ear to the ground on what's going on at the Armory, what's happening around the movement of the trailers, the so-called community house project for transitional housing that is displacing the open-air shelter, and also the possibility of real open-air shelter campground facilities in the months ahead, supported hopefully by the city and county, and spearheaded to some extent by the actions of SOS, Save Our Shelter, headed by Barbara Riverwoman, Sherry Connable, River Street Refugee Campers, Sammy, Tim, Dan Hopkins, hey, everybody out there. No problem with supporting that effort. I also have no problem criticizing the idea that the effort is going to work without some real pressure. And I think it's really important we get past personality differences between activists. And I have plenty of them with different activists, including the scoundrel next to me, the scumbag with the cap here. Feel free indeed.
No.
Ha! Give me a break.
Just because I called you a media slut.
Media slut, hey.
I want to comment a bit on Mr. Kennedy, something that came up when we were talking about whether Mr. Kennedy's word can be trusted. I'll never forget the headlines when the sitting ban was overturned and ruled unconstitutional. Scott Kennedy said words to the effect of, I didn't agree with the sitting ban, but I voted for it anyways. Moses is the man that some people are resting their faith on. I have no faith left in this man. This man has no conscience.
He also, right 1 month after that sitting ban was overturned, he voted for a new sitting ban.
Yes. So flip-flopping back and forth, you know, this is the way our political system runs. This is the way that we do politics. And some may argue that, well, you know, a lot of people do that. You know, you've got to get the council to go along with you, so you've got to vote certain ways. You know, one hand washes the other. Well, that's bullshit. Maybe the way we do politics in this country, but it doesn't make it right. If you're going to get in there and represent the people, you need to take an opinion and you need to stick with it.
Yeah, I also want to point out that research done by Celine Marie Pascal, who did her doctorate and her MA thesis on the situation of the homeless in Santa Cruz 1988 through 94, pointed out that she interviewed Kennedy and other council members extensively to consider her thesis was called The Public Reaction to Homelessness or The Public Perception, something like that. And she found out from Kennedy that he and others, I believe, didn't really support the downtown ordinances to begin with. They actually opposed them, and that seemed to be consistent with Kennedy's general position. Since Kennedy says he's always opposed the sleeping ban, that has always been his claim from the very beginning. And indeed, early on in council votes, he actually voted against setting a curfew at the town clock, which happened in 1991, and there were several other liberal votes in his first year, which he essentially took a rather lonely stance. I think Byers voted with him on occasion, and I was impressed with that. I mean, he seemed to me to be, you know, a hopeful sign. And of course, then that all became abandoned as he helped mutilate and castrate Citizens Police Review, delay it to death, and give us the toy poodle review that we now have. And of course, when he became mayor, he supported these anti-homeless laws. But what Celine's thesis pointed out was that apparently there was the council and the downtown merchants had always had a running rift on things like laws regulating musicians and so forth, and the council had kind of, you know, taken a different view under the so-called progressive majority, even though the progressive majority supported the sleeping ban, which sucks big time, and of course we've always pointed out as being really an example of their hypocrisy. But after the earthquake, there was a concern that everybody pulled together, and so what happened was the merchant agenda became the primary agenda in Santa Cruz Vision. What was it called? Vision Quest? It was called Vision Quest. It was the plan to redo the mall, which essentially was a larger version of a small pilot project proposed by Marty Wormhout and John Laird right before the earthquake. Namely, they straighten up the street, they remove all the bushes, they remove all the planters, so you can no longer be sitting along the mall except at established benches. In other words, there was a whole kind of what I call anti-homeless plan that was put into effect. And what happened around 1994, at the very beginning of the year, there was the riot downtown. It was a riot by drunken youth and also angry youth who were, clubbed by police at the town clock an hour early when the police decided to move in and stop, you know, disperse people at New Year's Eve.
So who was rioting first?
The police were beating people first, inappropriately.
Right.
They were very disciplined.
Inappropriately.
They were disciplined.
Right.
We would call
they
that a riot.
Beating them appropriately.
A disciplined riot, yes. And then, of course, there was this looting downtown. And then there were the peace vigils by Dave Jacobs and Robert Flory, two activists concerned about the sleeping ban, which were very peaceful 1 and 2 week vigils around Christmas and Valentine's Day that set up in front of one of the abandoned fences, which what is now the Cinema 9, I guess it is, complex. And this, you know, this provoked the merchants to great rage and anger, claiming that, you know, here was a great target for their business problems. And they started pressuring city council big time. And city council did not want, this is according to what Celine said, her interview with Scott Kennedy showed, city council did not want to see the rift opening up between the merchants and the city council again. So even though certain council members were opposed to laws making it illegal to ask for spare change after dark, making it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, the council held its nose, some of them, or, I don't know, stuck its finger up in its ears, or, I don't know, whatever they did, and they went along with these anti-homeless laws, or as the song says. And then without a pause, he voted for these laws. Actually, oh, Mayor Mike, what has happened to you?
I actually sang that on the mall the other day when my guitar string broke.
Can it be true? Just take a look at the
pocket.
People you're trying to screw. Maybe soon you'll be on the streets too.
So now we have a rift between the city council and the riffraff on the mall. They may not, you know, everything must be going well with the business owners, but there's a whole other class of people that's been ostracized in this community and downright abused, and now that they don't have Jerry to follow around anymore, they're getting pretty pissed off.
Robbing banks, some of them. Maybe.
Well, now, wait a minute. I don't want to comment on that one. I don't know who paid that guy to make that statement. I mean, they couldn't have paid him to make a better statement for this city. To give people the wrong impression, because that's what they want to do, is give people the wrong impression. It's what it's all about. I was talking to my mother the other day, and she's going, "Well, you're not one of those homeless people, are you?"
We should tell our audience that.
Watch TV.
We're referring to a Sentinel story which had a arrest of a man who robbed actually a bank a couple times by the Sentinel report, and then was picked up eating a curry chicken in the food court, and claimed that he was doing it because now that Jerry was gone, he had nothing left to do or something.
Yeah, well, I want to comment on that one. I know that guy. I've known him for about a year now, and to my knowledge, he started following the dead about 2 months before Jerry died. He was a thief when he was in this town before, and he was ostracized by every group of people he came in contact with because he'd thief from them. And I think the deadheads are just a little more accepting than a lot of other groups of people, and they let him kind of hang out in their community for a very short time. That comment is pretty ridiculous, because it's not like he spent his whole life following Jerry like a lot of these people. He had just started. His dreadlocks were not that long. And another thing I want to say, I don't think I looked anything like that guy. I saw his picture in the paper, and I don't know if you heard Bob's coverage of the story, but when I was getting my morning coffee at the Metro that day, I got jacked up for being a bank robbery suspect with my coffee in my hand.
Brought to justice at last. Feel free.
It was really interesting, too, because this cop apparently doesn't spend a whole lot of time in the mall, so he doesn't know about the free radio tape recorders. And when Bob was sticking the tape recorder in his face, and the cop was trying to get rid of Bob, he went ahead and just acted like his old cop self, and didn't know where that tape would turn up, and was very downright rude. Told Bob, "You have the right to shut up." Told a citizen of this, "You have the right to shut up." Just an arrogant motherfucker. It was on the air about 2 hours after he said it. I hope it's been a learning experience to that officer, because it's on a loop tape now, and it'll be played forever.
Well, now we've gotten back to you on the mall, Phil, and your nefarious activities as a bank robber suspect.
Yeah.
what you've had a number of run-ins legally. Do any of your cases have any legal status at the moment? And if not, how are police treating you as a musician on the mall?
I have received police harassment of late from Officer Over of the Santa Cruz Police Department. My latest incident, playing in front of the Del Williams Jewelers. Once again, I played about a 15-minute set. Was not asked to leave or not approached by anybody until the officers showed up. And that's the way it usually works in this town. These people just call their enforcement arm rather than deal with you as a human being.
This was a recent incident?
A recent incident. Officer Over was in a noticeably foul mood that day. Was all over my case. He was huffing and puffing. I really think that somebody needs to, if any of the Santa Cruz police officials are listening, I think you need to get Officer Over treated for high blood pressure. The man is too tense. I think he's going to explode someday, and I'm concerned for his safety on the job. Anyways, he's really worked up, and he's yelling at me, he's talking, and you can't play there, and you can't play here, and you can't have your guitar case open, and you can't. He told me I couldn't have my tapes displayed. I had a little sign that said suggested donation, five. Didn't say $5, it said suggested donation, five. And by my reading of the law, that's pretty fucking illegal. And I've seen sanctioned street musicians do the same thing with blatant prices on their tapes. But he told me,
I couldn't have my tapes out anymore, and if I did, he was going to confiscate them as evidence. He also blurted out at me, he said, don't be within 50 feet of a change machine. And that was really funny, because I've never been within 50 feet of a change machine, but he was like spouting all the shit off. Later that night, Bob had an incident with the same cop.
Skidmark Bob. Just kidding, musician.
He was at the same spot, actually, oddly enough, he was singing the same song.
Which was?
Kill the Cop Inside. That's a Just Kidding song off our new release that'll be coming out this week. It seems to be causing a stir with the with some of the enforcement people. I don't know if you heard that interview, but it was really interesting. RoboCop and Over and Skidmark Bob debating free speech and Ice-T's Cop Killer for about 15 minutes on the mall.
Really?
The difference in Bob's exchange with the same officers and my exchange seems to be that he had a free radio tape recorder stuck in their face right away. Mm-hmm. He received much better treatment. They were much more polite. And it's been my experience with the hosts and the cops in this town that seems to be the only way to get respectful treatment in this town. The hosts were real hardcore at one time. And when people started to rise up about that, protests started to start. People started doing radio stories. Some people wrote songs about them. The hosts have been trying really hard to change their appearance down on the mall, at least in front of certain people, where they were just blatant fascists at the time when most of these protests started.
Which brings me to a question I wanted to ask you,
Bill. Mm-hmm.
I have a recording I'm going to play later by a man who was either maced or pepper-gassed by a host last week, and I know this has received some airplay either on your or Bob's show.
Yes, the story broke on my show, I believe.
And I also spoke to the new supervisor of the hosts, a man named Matt, who wanted to get a kind of a fuller story and actually requests that you get in touch with him or somebody get in touch with him to talk about this. I think he is concerned about, this is the first such instance I've heard where a host herself or himself is actually maced or pulled a weapon of any sort on a person on the street. Now, I heard this rumor that maybe what I should do is I should play the tape first and then have you comment on the testimony given by who is our man?
D-Bob
was the fellow who was maced.
Pepper gassed.
Before we do, however, and in order to give me time to set up the tape, I'm going to play a little bit more of Daryl Churney's. I Had to Be Born in This Century, his old album. Unless you want to do some talking yourself, Phil.
I'll comment further. I've followed the story very closely, and I've interviewed all the parties involved, and there's some serious improprieties. And if Matt would like to talk about